Hello and welcome to You Don't Know Lit. I'm Nick Argyris, and this week I'm looking for a book with a nice positive message, a book about success.
We've been reading a lot of downers.
Yeah, well, we do downers well. Mm-hmm. That's our brand. We do it well, and we do it often.
Some would even say that this podcast is itself a downer.
Uh-huh, some would say that.
They'd be wrong.
Yes, but those people are dead to us. So to help me with this theme that I've manifested are two successful high school English teachers.
My name
is Ian and Joe.
Oh, thanks, Nick, for that introduction. My name is Joe Holshue. Nick and Ian, if you are looking for an upper of a book or a success story of a book, I've got a fantastic one this week. I have reread Trevor Noah's 2016 memoir, Born a Crime, about his life growing up in apartheid South Africa. And I know that doesn't sound funny, but it is.
Okay.
I'm sure we'll unpack that.
Yeah.
Hello. My name is Dr. Ian DeYoung.
Hello.
I would classify my success level as fair to middling. And today, gentlemen, if you are looking for a success story, I have an interesting narrative for you. Here's the title.
Oh boy.
The Interesting Narrative of the Life of Olaudah Equiano or Gustavus Vassa the African. It's written by Olaudah Equiano or Gustavus Vassa the African. And it is an
interesting narrative. Can we unpack those names too?
Oh boy, the names are so fascinating. Yes. Lots of unpacking.
Love it.
It's like a storefront full of suitcases.
Yep, just got home from vacation. Got a lot of unpacking to do.
Yeah. It's luggage inside of other luggage, I think is what we're saying.
Mm-hmm. Like those cubes, like those packing cubes. Do you guys use packing cubes?
Like Russian nesting dolls?
No. You're thinking of something else.
Look, they're kind of like Russian nesting dolls. They're like Russian nesting suitcases. There are bags for your bags.
It's like Russian dolls for your underpants.
It's like Russian dolls for your underpants, yes.
Gentlemen, I am not a soldier of fortune like you two are. I'm not debonair. Mm-hmm. I don't go on many travel trips to the Dominican Republic. Mm-hmm. Why would you need Russian nesting suitcases for your underwear? I don't understand the need for this, the value.
Well, part of it might be lifestyle inflation. Nick, you could take this one.
You guys don't want to talk about your underpants? Come on.
It just creates nice little systems for organization. And there's no real joke to it. It's just really nice just to stay organized on the road. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. This is one of those things that when my
wife gets
first,
hectic.
Yeah, that's it. I also have no joke. I just earnest things to say about packing cubes, which is just amazing audio. When Megan first introduced these to my life, it was one of those things where I was like, packing cubes, that seems stupid.
And whatever, you go on square. One trip.
Yeah.
I like my underpants everywhere. On that note,
you don't know. Now this is podcasting.
Oh God. It's not.
May your earlobes turn into assholes and shit on your shoulders.
Hey, the plot doesn't fucking matter at all. This is what I think it's about.
If you look closely enough, every author was at some point a racist.
Audiobooks don't count, right?
All art is quite useless.
Who told you that?
Fun fact, that is how Joe laughs.
Nick, you know what I realized yesterday after we'd recorded is that was like a ruleless episode. Our last episode felt like it was totally without rules. Like I didn't know what I was supposed to be doing and what I wasn't. And I realized, of course, after the fact that we never clued the lit heads in to the rules that we have for this show.
I think we did.
We absolutely did, Joe. I'm sorry.
No.
Yeah, we 100% did.
That might be when I just take off my headphones and walk away.
So that's unfortunate. Really showed your hand there. But thank you for oddly bringing up our rules, Joe, in a strange way.
I don't think we did. I think
we'll check the audio. But we do have rules, Joe. Thank you for bringing that up organically. So every week on You Don't Know Lit, we make up a theme and then pick two books. And then only, obviously, of course, one of those books can win.
Except for that one time.
Mm-hmm. Except for that one time. That's right, Ian. Thank you. But we do have some rules to keep us in check as well. Rule number one, only unavoidable spoilers, please, gentlemen. Rule number two, omit needless words, Joe. And rule number three, winning isn't everything. It's the only thing that's important here on You Don't Know Lit. So are you guys feel like you're going to, now this is going to hurt. Whoever doesn't win, this is going to hurt. Because this is about being successful.
Oh, yeah. Right. I thought it was like some sort of like punishment came with losing this week. Like so if you don't win, Nick is going to hit you. Or if you don't win, Nick is going to send you mean texts for the rest of the week.
No, just public humiliation.
Scorn.
Right.
Here's my problem with this whole episode, okay? Right from the jump. I feel like, Nick, you, as arbiter of themes, have kind of backed us into a corner with the whole spoilers, because it seems like the plot of our books is spoiled in the very theme.
Oh, like, sure.
These are success stories. There's no suspense. It's like doing a mystery themed episode where the theme is the butler does it.
Right, the butler. Well, so this is why the rule is so great, because I just kind of sidestep it by saying it was unavoidable. So
So like when you're bringing a success story, I am not spoiler, at fault. Like the inherent spoiler, the baked in spoiler is things turn out okay for Trevor Noah and Gustav.
Great.
Olajek.
Not a strong foundation for Ian. I'm going to say just superficial success. I feel like, at least in my world, Trevor Noah is a little bit more successful. But are we going to maybe learn a little bit along the way and find out there's maybe more definitions of success than maybe fame and fortune?
Ian? Well, if I tell you, then the learning wouldn't be secret, so I won't tell you.
Okay. All right. Keep it a secret as long as you can. Joe, do you want to start out by giving me a little teaser of your book?
Yeah, I can definitely do that. Nick, Born a Crime is what J.D. Vance wishes Hillbilly Elegy was. Ian, I got that from you. It was so good. It's an honest, engaging, literary look at a world that Trevor Noah, you know, actually grew up in. Trevor Noah is a South African. He's a hilarious comedian. He's the host of The Daily Show, and his memoir is, in one, a touching and gleeful look at his childhood, an examination of the upside downness of apartheid, and a love letter to his mother. He didn't win a lot of awards for it, but he did win an Audie Award for the best male narrator of 2016. Nick, I think you should read Born a Crime by Trevor Noah.
An Audie?
Audie. So apparently Audible has in-house awards for like their best, for the best of the year. And Trevor Noah.
Can we sign up?
Well, I think we have to have an audiobook. So I think we have to get going on Too Many Butlers. An Audie.
This is so stupid. I'm sorry, Audible. Audible. Hey, listen,
Shut
Audible,
your
if you're
mouth.
Listening, turn the podcast off right now
Don't
and come back in like
our
a minute.
Like that.
Listen, this is like that thing at the Brewery Stadium, Miller Park, where they have the sausage race, and the winner of the sausage race is fixed because they know that the sausage that wins gets sold more at concessions. So they fix it to be the.
Wait. This sounds like conspiracy nonsense.
It's a conspiracy. It's not nonsense, though. Listen, they just wanted to boost up his numbers. And so they said, oh, yeah, Trevor, here,
Audi. Hold on. You're saying there's a situation at Miller Park where they have live via communications with the kitchen, and they're like, oh, we're low on hot dogs. Don't let hot dog win.
No, it's got to be the Johnsonville.
And they have this situation. Yeah, not Johnsonville.
They absolutely do
this.
We're
out of mustard.
Listen, litheads, if you are not from the great state of Wisconsin, at Miller Park, one of the many wonderful traditions is the sausage race, which is usually in the seventh inning during a baseball game.
No
and
need
they
to
have
explain.
Huge sausages that run around and do a race. And they're funny, I guess. They hit each other with bats. It's just some good old-fashioned violence. Mm-hmm. But the truth is
sausage
that
violence.
They do fix. They've noticed, okay? They've noticed that the winner of the sausage race sells better at concessions after the sausage race. And so when they have a lot of chorizo back in the kitchen, or when they have a lot of, you know, kielbasa, Polish sausage back in the kitchen, they say
Gordon Ramsay is just yelling.
That's going to be the winner.
I
like to think it is Gordon Ramsay himself who makes that call.
I don't know, Ian. I'm dubious.
Confessions of a Racing Sausage article. Oh my God. We're about to blow this open. For 3 years, I was a proud member of the Milwaukee Brewers Brew Club. The job mostly entails of doing odd jobs of various levels. But the main draw of the gig, other than getting essentially paid to go to games, was every so often getting to compete in the 6-inning sausage race.
Wow.
Wow. Here's a tell-all. Maybe next week we'll bring the best sausage story. Maybe we should do conspiracies next week.
Oh, wow. Boy.
This man says the races aren't rigged. So I guess you're a liar, Ian.
Well, yeah, but that's what he would say. Like, they got to him. The agents obviously got to him, yes.
Ian, do you want to tell me about your book?
I'd love to.
You have 30 seconds.
Thank you. We think of enslaved and free as a binary. You're either free or you're not free. My book this week, which is entitled, as I mentioned, The Interesting Narrative of the Life of Olaudah Equiano or Gustavus Vassa the African, explodes that binary myth. You're either free or you're not. Throughout the book, the main character is constantly questing for his freedom. Through shipwrecks, music lessons, spiritual awakenings, and war, Equiano fights to be free in a system designed to keep him enslaved.
That sounds like a downer. Is this?
It's not a downer.
Sounds like it is going to be.
It's a spoiler. It's a success story.
Hmm.
Joe, does your book have jokes in it? Is it funny?
Yeah, it's really funny. And it's, which is a curse on this podcast. Because I'm going to, guys, really. I'm going to spend 20 minutes telling you how funny this book is.
How funny it is. We can't wait.
It's really good. Guys, you guys should totally read this. So it's funny. So funny. He does this one thing.
Well, that sounds terrible. So let's have Ian go first.
All right.
This book, I guess the first thing to say is that my book from last week, Invisible Man, it does kind of jump around. There's a lot of like little things that happen, but it does have a single overriding narrative. As I mentioned, this guy, Olaudah Equiano, wants to be free. He's questing after freedom and comfort. And so he is enslaved very early in the book. And there, it's published in 1789. So this is kind of the era we're working with. So he's enslaved, and there are a bunch of times when he thinks, oh, this is it. I'm going to be freed. Or somebody promises him, I'll set you free. Or he thinks he has been freed.
Oh, no.
And then he's re-enslaved, or he's kind of like shot down. He gets kidnapped and sold at least twice. I kind of stopped counting, but it's a lot of times. There's a part where he sets out to buy his freedom, and he builds up his savings from like literally he has a single glass bead. And he buys it for like 2 cents and he sells it for 6 cents. And he goes back and buys 3 glass beads for those 6 cents and sells them for 18 cents. He just like he builds up his savings from literally nothing. He gets robbed a whole bunch of times, but eventually he does gain his freedom. And he does this by a combination of things. He's really good with like mercantile stuff. He gets lucky. A couple of times, there are a few white people who promise him things and actually keep those promises. And he's also really, really smart.
Wow.
Okay, Ian. And eventually, Joe.
Yes.
I know you're probably thinking, Nick, the reason this show exists is because you asked just the best questions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're like, so good at questions.
Right, like the piercing insight.
Sometimes I wake up at night and I like punch the pillow because your questions are so good.
Right.
Like, yeah. Like you could try to answer them.
You wake up, I don't even fall
asleep. How could you? They're just so good at them.
Right.
But I'm going to ask you guys a lot of dumb questions. So, so this is a biography?
It's an autobiography.
Autobiography?
Yeah.
Okay. And all this, and so, where does this book take place?
Well, it kind of takes place all over. This is part of the wildness of this book.
A vagabond.
The interesting stuff. This book is like a lot of boat adventures. This is a genre. Oh,
well, that's
a loose
nice.
Subgenre
that,
of book.
I bet it's not as fun as it sounds. is there squash buckling?
For him. Oh, there is. There actually is some swashbuckling. There's a part where he has this captain who is crazy and wants to. The captain sees a ship and the captain says, well, that's it. That's a Spaniard. I'm going to blow up our ship. And so the captain takes a torch and goes toward the powder barrel. Mm-hmm. And Equiano grabs an axe and stands between the captain and the powder barrel for an hour, keeping the captain at bay from exploding the ship and everyone on it.
So the captain wants to blow up a ship because he sees another ship and things are hopeless? Like they're going to be captured?
Yeah, he doesn't want... Well, he's crazy, first of all. Okay, and he also doesn't want to get captured, lose this vessel. Right. But he's mostly really crazy.
Okay, so yeah, there's like him standing between the captain with a torch, but I bet there's a lot of like deck swabbing as well. Like the less glamorous side of ship going.
Is there a boo-boo box?
I was thinking about this as I was reading it. He does a lot of boat voyaging in this book. Mm-hmm. And when the boat voyage is uneventful, he doesn't tell you about it. He's just like, we left and then we got to England. It's very, very like lean. When there's something cool to say, he tells you about it. But when there's nothing interesting, he's like, so 3 years later.
Yeah, it's like it's like the travel problem in Dungeons and Dragons, where it's like, okay, you have to go to this place that's super far away. What do you do? It's like, we go there.
We're there.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. You're there.
Yep.
You did it.
Congrats.
And you had obstacles along the way and then you overcame them.
In Dungeons and Dragons, you do that because like you're moving to the good stuff. You're getting to the good stuff. And that's one of the things that this book does really well. It's like it's his whole life. It's published in 1789. He was born in 1745. So it's 45 years of experiences. It's not a long book. And he just like he tells you the stuff that's interesting and the other stuff doesn't the deck swabbing doesn't show up.
So, okay. I'm going to ask you just a rapid fire of questions.
Yes.
Did he write this book towards the end of his life or did it take him his whole life to write this book? Did he write other books? How is this a success story? This sounds like a terrible, terrible life that he lived.
Well, it sounds like a frustrating life.
Well, sounds terrible. Sounds like he was a slave for most of his life. You say there's a lot of squashbuckling, but I'm a little confused by that statement considering the other statements you've made about his life. I'm just trying to put all these pieces together.
Mm-hmm. Right. We don't normally associate a slave with piracy.
Right. So he's not a pirate. He runs in with pirates. He bumps into pirates. He gets shipwrecked, but he's not a pirate himself. He's always on the sunny side of the law. He did write this toward the end of his life. It was published about 10 years before he died. It didn't take him all his life to do it, though. He became kind of a well-known, prominent anti-slavery activist in England. And people said, wow, dude, you had a pretty crazy life. You should probably write that down. And this will help people realize that slavery is a bad thing, realize it should be outlawed. So he did. Over the course of about 5-6 years, he wrote this down. And I've lost your other questions. There were so many.
Yeah, that's fine. I got more. That's why. That's
here comes six more questions.
So many questions. The last time we talked about a book that was published by an author who was at one point a slave. Remind me of that book again, Ian.
It was Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl.
Well, part of what I thought was interesting about that book was how it was she couldn't publish it.
Right.
And that she had to go through basically a white person to like publish it so it could get out there. So like this book was, your book was published in 1789.
Uh-huh.
How did this book get out there or when did it get out there?
It just did.
Was that, did he have those same problems or no?
Well, so a big part of this, this is the first book to be written by a black person that was, widely read in Europe. He was not in America. He was in England and Europe, the Mediterranean, as well as the Caribbean for a while. So the climate there was different. They were about 60 years ahead of us. Mm-hmm. They outlawed slavery in 1807. We didn't outlaw it until the mid-1860s, early 1860s. So like in England, he was more able to publish this than former enslaved person would have been in America. But there was some drama with this because...
Are you talking bad about America?
That's what it sounds like.
No, I'm talking about in England. In England, there was drama with this book, 1789, which is incidentally right around the time the Constitutional Congress is meeting, Constitutional Convention. Like America is becoming a thing at this point. So he wrote this and then people started attacking his character right
away.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Like to say, oh, he wasn't actually a slave.
Sure.
This isn't true. Right? It's fake.
He's not qualified to write this. But yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he actually has a preface to this book where he says, no, listen, chumps, this did actually happen to me. It's all true. And here are the people, the white people you can talk to who will back up my story.
Sure.
The foreword is just to the haters.
Yeah. He cited his sources.
He's citing his sources. Yeah. And he's also got footnotes throughout the book that are kind of extensive and say, this is where you can get more evidence on this. So there was a pushback, but
fascinating.
In England, there was much more of a, I think the abolition was much more well-developed in 1789.
That's a good enough answer. I mean, there's a lot to that question. Sure. So just a progressive climate, like you said.
Yeah.
Slightly more progressive.
Slightly, right, because it was
very slightly.
Just
very
fast slightly. Forward by 60 years. Ian, is this a frustrating book to read? Like just the very first things that you say feel frustrated. I feel stymied.
Like big words or like lots of syllables. Mm-hmm. Is it just frustrating like that, Ian?
There are a lot of words, but the words were easy. It's strange because the style is very accessible. He's a really, really good writer and he's good at painting word pictures and so forth. I will say that like... The number of times he is so close to being free and then gets kicked in the teeth and pushed back down. Maybe frustrating is exasperating. It's like, come on, is this never going to happen?
It's like the ending of Lord of the Rings, like the Return of the King. It's like, is this ever going to end, right? Like,
are they ever going to put that damn ring in that volcano?
And this is your Hobbit fact for the day. In the end, they did put the ring in the volcano.
Oh, that's a pretty
spoilers.
Low-hanging spoilers. Hobbit fact.
But yeah, it feels a bit, there are times and it feels like it's sort of treading the same ground, but he's always like moving forward. He's always getting more education. He's always kind of, no matter where he finds himself, whether he's on a ship in the British Navy or on a plantation in the Caribbean, or on an expedition to the North Pole, he is always like doing a good job at being an adult, being mature and not being an idiot and kind of rising through the ranks. So no matter how many times he gets kicked back down, he keeps having success wherever he turns. Now, this may be in part because it's an autobiography.
right. I'm a little confused at like ranks and success. Isn't he a slave? Is that a dumb question?
No.
I'm not afraid to ask dumb questions.
No.
It gets kind of confusing at first. So the story begins and he gives you a whole chapter about like the culture that he's taken from. And then we learn about him being enslaved. And the first chunk of his life, he is an enslaved person. And there are a couple of times when he believes that according to a certain law in England, he should be free, but the white people who are enslaving him are like, yeah, but no.
Yeah.
Instead, I'm going to lock you up in irons and take you on this ship. So he kind of doesn't really have a lot of power there. Eventually, he gets to a fellow in the Caribbean. His owner is, it's kind of weird. He's like, this guy was really nice to me. He was my owner, but he was really nice to me. This guy says, if you can give me 40 pounds, I'll set you free. Like you can buy your freedom. And so he does. And that's like his goal. That's kind of his quest for a while. But eventually, sorry, Nick, to just like put a pin in that. Eventually he buys his freedom and the rest of his life is kind of achieving financial security and avoiding people who want to kidnap him and re-enslave him.
Yeah.
And going to the North Pole and stuff like that.
Ian, why do you like this book? And also, what was successful about his story?
Yeah,
that's a real question for you.
those are good questions. So
let's get a little serious. Now.
I think to be serious, he has a really interesting relationship with the dominant culture that he's in. So the first section of the book, when he is on board a ship in the British Navy, he's doing a lot of fighting, a lot of naval battles, and he's always using the pronoun we. We did this. We did this. And he's kind of part of this group. Mm. But once he leaves that military environment, it becomes they. He's kind of doesn't feel connected to that anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a really interesting section where he's working with that doctor who invented the desalination. They're establishing a plantation in modern day Nicaragua and Honduras, and the plantation has slaves. And he's brought along, Aquiano was brought along, he's a free man at this point, to help manage the slaves. So like he's involved. He's not just like slaves are bad. He's also kind of benefiting from them in some ways. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of the book, he gets involved in this project to settle free poor black people from England in what is now the African country of Sierra Leone. Does this sound familiar to you guys?
It sounds like what we talked about. Did we talk about like Liberia?
Liberia.
Yeah, we talked about Liberia.
Liberia. Yeah. Right. So this is like the British equivalent, and Sierra Leone is right next to Liberia. So he's involved in basically the British people were doing the Liberia thing, settling freed slaves outside of the country. So his interaction with the dominant culture is really interesting. And there's also this element of psychological and spiritual development. So he's a really smart guy.
Please try.
I will. I'll try yes. so hard. This is a really well-written book. He demonstrates his intelligence and how he manages to buy his freedom, get away from being re-enslaved a whole bunch. We see him kind of develop as an intellectual person and his psychology develops, but he kind of becomes more mature and he also develops a really strong Christian faith. So early on, throughout the whole book, he's really interested in morality and religion. He's kind of like afraid spiritually. He has a lot of fear in his life. Living in danger, he's like, well, is there a heaven? Am I going to heaven? He's not a follower. He doesn't like accept what people tell him. So there's this whole passage where a bunch of people are saying, you should be this religion. You should be this. So he shops around and he's like, no, I don't like any of these. Eventually, he converts to Christianity about 3/4 of the way through the book, and this affects his life and his decision-making in really interesting ways. He's a different guy after this point. He's still like really shrewd, well-spoken, thoughtful, smart, but he's got this moral compass kind of beyond his own self-interest. So I would say success, to get back to the success question, this is success, but by kind of a variety of metrics. So he is influential in the abolitionist metrics. Movement. Mm-hmm. He is not a slave anymore.
Sure.
He is fairly well to do. He's well respected and well liked by a lot of people in British society.
Yeah.
He's also in a really good place, kind of psychologically and spiritually. Like he gets to a good internal place.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a weird metric of success. But by the end of the book, he is so much more chill and happy than he is at the beginning and kind of throughout most of it. So I would say like the triumph of the human spirit and just like personal, emotional, psychological success.
Okay. I should have been more specific with this theme. I was actually looking for financial success stories.
Ooh.
I'm sorry.
Well, he had some of that
might,
too,
you might be disqualified, but the book sounds pretty good.
The book sounds interesting. The book sounds like...
I didn't ask you about the title.
Oh, yeah.
What are the two names? I think I know, but just...
His name is Olada Aquiano. That's an African name. That's the name that he went by. But kind of early on, after he was enslaved, people started giving him, I almost said American names. I guess it'd be English names. Mm-hmm. First, they said, you're Jacob. And he was like, okay, I'm Jacob, I guess. And they're like, no, you're Michael. And so eventually somebody said, we're going to name you Gustavus Vasa. After a Swedish king. And he's like, no, I want to be Michael. And they hit him. They hit him on the head. So he was like, okay, I guess I'm Gustavus Vasa. So this was kind of his his name among white people, they would refer to him as Gustavus Vasa. But
I mean, is it a slave name? Is that an appropriate term for something like this?
Like, I think so. I think it's kind of like a slave name. He ended up keeping it because he became well known by it. But the title of the book emphasizes his African name, Olaudah Equiano. And when scholars talk about him, they talk about him using this name. So it kind of like that's, you don't call him Gustavus Vasa, but he would have called himself that. It's a really weird kind of like, what do you call him? He wasn't going around insisting on being called Olaudah Equiano, but he titles his autobiography with this name. So
yeah, to be fair, both those names are awesome. Like Olaudah Equiano is a really cool name. And Gustavus, what is it? Gustavus Fring?
Vasa.
Vasa, there it is.
Fring, I think that's the bad guy from Breaking Bad.
Yeah, Gustavo Vasa, both very, very cool names.
It sounds, man, I wanted to say fun, but it doesn't sound fun.
It's not a fun book. I would say it's an uplifting book. You get to the end, you're like, yeah, we've been through it with this guy, and he went through it, and he is in a good place now.
Cool.
Heartwarming. Cool. There we go. It's heartwarming.
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 You mean successful?
I mean, it successfully warms my heart, so there we go. What's up? What's up, gentlemen? Listen.
What? Hey.
Oh, hey.
I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Can you name the six different categories that the Pulitzer Prize awards for? Can you name them?
This is a fun game. I'd like to start. I think they probably give out a poetry award. Poetry.
We'll say literature, yes.
That was nice.
Okay. Well, and we're off to a strong start in this fun little game.
Nick?
Wait a minute. So literature is one.
Yep.
I'm going to say music is one.
Music is one. Yes.
Yeah.
Joe.
I think famously journalism is one.
Yes.
Maybe a specific type of journalism. Should I get more specific?
Yeah, maybe a specific type.
Oh boy. How do you call this? Like reporting or like breaking a story, like investigative journalism.
Is breaking a story one?
I think investigative journalism.
There's actually breaking news and investigative. I scrolled down on the Wikipedia article I'm using for this, and I realized there's like 20 of these.
Ooh, so let's keep guessing.
I'll just tell you the other ones. Magazine journalism, online journalism, public service.
So everything.
Yeah.
Basically everything. Yeah. And if you win...
Hey, is tobogganing on there?
No, they do have luge, which is kind of weird.
Okay. That is weird.
Maybe next week we should bring some Pulitzer Prize winning books.
Great.
I am currently reading, I'm almost finished reading Mr. Whitehead's, Colson, let me get his name right, Colson Whitehead's 2016 Pulitzer Prize winner and National Book Award winner and Oprah's Book Club selection, which we all know is the highest badge of honor. The Underground Railroad.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. The Underground Railroad, which, Nick, I don't want to spoil anything, but in The Underground Railroad, it's actually a railroad that's underground.
Like yes.
Yeah, it's actually an underground
railroad.
I'm
so excited about that. I'll bring a different book. I'll bring a nonfiction book called The Warmth of Other Suns. It's about the Great Migration, which I didn't know anything about before I read this book. Won the Pulitzer in 2010, and it is fascinating. Forget the secret. This will just be straight up learning, and you guys will love it.
Joe, I'm excited to hear about your financially successful author.
Yeah,
Trevor Noah.
I think he does well for himself. I don't know that for sure, but I would imagine if you take over The Daily Show from Jon Stewart, like that probably comes with a pay raise.
Yeah. It could be a situation in which he is financially successful, but not as like, you know, emotionally successful.
Right. Almost
so like he could be dead on the inside.
Right. He could be dead on the inside, but I don't think he is.
I went to celebritynetworth.com and it says he's worth $40 million.
Wow.
Oh, okay. So he is happy inside then.
How tall does it say he is? And who is his girlfriend? And are there pictures of his feet?
You don't have to answer any of those.
I feel like every time you Google something, strange, it's like, if questions. When you type in Trevor Noah, it's like Trevor Noah girlfriend, Trevor Noah net worth, Trevor Noah height, Trevor Noah feet.
So does it say anything about if he, what his scent is like?
I bet it's
boy.
Joe, what is your book about?
So my book is a memoir written by Trevor Noah. The version that I listened to is also read by Trevor Noah. Like beautifully, expertly, fantastically read by Trevor Noah. And it is about Trevor Noah. It's specifically about probably about like the first 20 years of his life, which is kind of crazy because it doesn't get into his super success. Like, it talks about him being born in apartheid South Africa, what it was like growing up there with a single mother, and basically how he navigated the pretty complex, pretty upside down world that he was born into.
Did you know that Trevor Noah was in Black Panther?
Was he?
He was, there's an AI in a ship, which is called Griot, and he voices that AI. It's a Wakandan ship. Sorry.
No,
Black
good.
Panther derailment happens all the time on this show. Go ahead and happens tell us about the complex things in South Africa, Joe. I'm sorry for interrupting you, taking your time.
I'll grab this one by the horns.
Yeah, let's hear it.
I don't know anything about apartheid.
Boy, so until I read this
learning.
Book.
Yeah, even if I thought I could tell you guys that I do, I'm sure I don't.
Yeah, so before I read this book, apartheid was just this thing that I had heard of that was bad, right? Like, you heard it and you're like, oh yeah, that's that South African thing. It's bad. I don't really know anything about it.
Super broad strokes, but yes, I'm on board.
Yep.
Well, so I don't think you were wrong, Joe.
No, I think I nailed it. I don't know if I could have written that on the final exam. Yeah. I'll give you the shortest version I can while still being mostly accurate. South Africa, like much of Africa, has a rich and devastating history of colonization. It is basically apartheid is, do you know how, like, when we talked about Native Son, or when we talked about Invisible Man, we talked about systemic racism, right? Just like the racism in place in society.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of times,
it's built into the structure.
It's built right into the structure. Well, a lot of times,
right into the scaffolding.
Yep. It's in the bones. A lot of times when we talk about that, we kind of talk about almost like accidental systemic racism, like the sort of thing like Henry Dalton owning the tenements that Bigger Thomas's family lives in, but then donating all this money to NAACP. Like, it's almost this accidental systemic racism.
Sure.
In apartheid South Africa, it is overt systemic racism. Like, it is things like, maybe like we would think of maybe like the Jim Crow South, things like black people and white people aren't allowed to marry, and there's like widespread segregation. Things, that's probably the closest analogy that I could draw.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I'm learning stuff already.
Yep. So Trevor Noah is born in South Africa in, he's not very old. In 1984, he's born in South Africa.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting timeline because apartheid would end in South Africa in 1994. They would have free and fair elections. And apartheid would go away when he was 10 years old.
I'm sure once the political change happened that there was no more social problems, right?
Racism.
As soon as that got taken
stopped.
Care of, that was it.
That you got it. You know exactly how these things work.
It ended, Ian. Please pay attention. Joe's trying to present this book over here.
Yeah. I guess the one thing that you should know about Trevor Noah is he is mixed race. His mother is from a South African tribe, like an original South African tribe. His mother is black. His father is Swiss. And in apartheid South Africa, it was a very strange thing to be mixed. Not impossible. Like, it certainly happened. There were mixed people. But you were allowed to be white in South Africa. You were allowed to be black in South Africa. But whites and blacks were not allowed to intermingle, which therefore meant you were not allowed to be mixed in South Africa. Huh. So when he says, I was born a crime, he's talking about his mixed heritage and being born to this place in which he is not allowed.
Was it actually like
pretty badass?
Was it like a legal thing? Was it like there was no legal category for people who had white parent, blind and black parent?
So no, there was a legal category for them. It was just a legal category that didn't have a lot of the same. It was just a weird hybrid between the other two legal categories. So for example, like in apartheid South Africa, it was better to be white than black. It was also better to be mixed than it was to be black, right? Like being black was kind of the lowest on the totem pole. Mixed was in the middle, closer to black than white. And then white was on top. It actually, one of the interesting things about this book is it's like a really cool, like coming of age story for Trevor Noah, right? Like, and it follows him through his childhood. Like it follows him.
Buildings Roman.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah, it follows him like growing up and hanging out with his mom and getting crushes on girls and getting in trouble. At one point, he like accidentally burns down a house, like screwing around with matches. Yeah, like he steals from stores. He goes to church. Like it is just childhood stuff, right? And that's a ton of like fun stuff in this book. But one of the things that makes this book so cool and so engaging and so interesting is all of this happens against the background of apartheid South Africa, right? And you get to see a lot of this weirdness of the culture at the time.
It's secret learning 101.
Would you say that his own personal growth and development mirrors the growth and development of equality in South Africa?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it mirrors it. That's a little bit like, that's a little bit too cute, but I would say it is like sometimes.
It's a buildings roman.
Yeah, good, Nick. So.
Just coasting on that.
Can I tell you guys some crazy stuff about South Africa at this time? Just a few like fun facts that I learned.
Like about apartheid or like about like the safaris?
No.
Do you have a fun, hilarious game about apartheid?
No, I don't. Oh, I just have good. I just have three facts.
I'm glad.
If you were so South Africa's like it's kind of an important geographic area in the world. And as such, like it gets a lot of people from different countries. In South Africa, there were four races that were recognized. You could be white, you could be black, you could be mixed, which the terminology that they use for mixed is colored. It means you are neither black nor white, or you could be Indian, like from the subcontinent. You could be Indian.
It sounds like that scaffolding racism that you were talking about earlier.
Yep. As South Africa became more and more of a kind of worldly place, though, these other races of people would show up, and they had to figure out what to do with these races, like how to qualify these people.
Did this define citizenship or something?
100%. It defined your rights as a citizen. It defined how you were treated by the law. Absolutely.
Okay.
So if you were, for example, Chinese, right? If you were from China and you went to South Africa, they didn't know what to do with you, so you were black, right? If you were from China, you were black. However, if you were from Japan, because South Africa was very interested in importing like Sony and Toyotas, you were white. So Chinese people were black in South Africa. Japanese people were white.
So other countries are literally buying their way in to this beautiful society.
Just like all these like crazy
things. What did that mean? Just to clarify here, what does that mean? So if you were black, if you were white, or you were black on this totem pole, I assume they didn't have like a chart somewhere, did they?
Probably the closest you can imagine to them actually having a chart somewhere. Like it literally meant you had, if you were white, you had different protections under the law. If you were black, you had like harsher punishments, right? There were places that you were and were not allowed to live. It's a lot of the stuff that we're familiar with from U.S. history, right? Like, you know, like segregation, right?
It's like exactly like the U.S., but not actually in writing.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly.
Okay.
The stuff that's kind of been unspoken in the structure
or spoken
of the U.S.
or spoken
is spoken.
Is explicitly spoken. Is codified in law, like thousands of pages of law surrounding this.
So, just the classic buildings, Roman. But what else happens, Joe, to this young man?
For all this book is, a buildings roman, yes, an examination of like South Africa. Buildings roman,
yeah.
This is, and I think this is so touching, it is a love letter to his mom in a lot of ways. Like, do you remember back to Hillbilly Elegy when I said that the best thing about that book was the grandma?
Right. Correct.
The best thing about this book is Trevor Noah's mom, and she is just awesome. Like, she is like tough and kind of like, I mean, I think honestly why I like her so much, she kind of reminds me of my mom. Like, she's kind of nuts and she's kind of mean and she like beats the hell out of Trevor Noah, but it's all like through love, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all like done out of love.
Classic signs of love there.
Mm-hmm. The beatings.
The beatings, especially. There's a great story that exemplifies this early in this book. Him and his mom are trying to get to church in the morning. They went to three different churches every Sunday because his mom was a big, big believer, right? So they would go to black church, they would go to white church, and they would go to colored church every Sunday, right?
Wait, what?
Every single Sunday, they went to three churches.
Like a
one
trilogy?
For black people. Yep, that's exactly
I think the word you're looking for, Nick, is a trinity.
Damn it.
Take that.
Take your damn points, Ian, and get out of the room.
So he's got to go to all these churches. And Trevor Noah's like, he's a little kid. He just hates this, right? And their car and their car is just a piece of shit. So it breaks down. Okay. But his mother refuses to not go to church. So instead they pick up a minibus, which is just like this informal mode of transportation, right? They get in the minibus, which is essentially like a van that shuttles you around. It's kind of like a bus
like a shuttle
taxi. Yeah, it's like a shuttle. They get in the minibus, which is driven by like this cantankerous guy. And his mom starts like fighting with the minibus driver, like arguing with the minibus driver.
Classic.
At which point the minibus driver, he talks about like her tribe that she came from. She came from this very specific tribe. And he's like, look, all you women are the same. You're all just sluts, right? Because she, of course, has this half race child, like this mixed child with her, right? And he says, you know what? Tonight, I'm going to teach you your lesson, right? And like the implication is this guy's going to rape his mother, right? Like he like stopping at stop signs and stop and go lights. He like starts like speeding around town.
Man, the
and
story mom, started real funny, Joe.
Yeah.
And let's and just say mom, it's not anymore. And then what happens?
So his mom like kind of leans over to Trevor. Trevor's like 5 years old at the time. And she says, hey, when he slows down at the next stoplight, like I'm going to open the door and we are going to like jump and roll. Like we're going to like tuck and roll out of this car. And he's like, okay. What? And as they stop at the next stoplight, like she opens the door and they dive out into traffic and like roll away. By the way, she has like an infant son in her arms at the time. And they like get away from this. In that story, Trevor Noah tells it, and like as horrifying as that is, like the subtext or overtext of that story is, like it is such a fun story to listen to. Like for like Trevor Noah to tell you, like he tells it, he's a
buildings roman.
He's a buildings roman.
A rock on tour. All I have in my head is buildings roman, Nick. He's a rock on tour. Like he tells you that story and you are hooked and you are laughing and you're like a little bit horrified, but like mostly it's a really fun, light story. That's kind of the tone of this entire book. Like it is like fun and light in the face of like serious darkness.
Is it like dark comedy where we're laughing at things that are kind of like grim, but they're told in the way that makes them funny? Or is it like finding the good stuff to laugh about to make the bad stuff less dreadful?
I think it's a combination of both.
Seems like a pretty lame answer.
Well, he does say explicitly, right? He says, look, I was blessed with this trait that I inherited from my mother, right? She and I both have the ability to forget the pain and trauma in life. Like, we remember the thing that caused the trauma, but we don't hold on to it. He says, if you think too much about the ass kicking that life gave you, you'll stop pushing the boundaries. He says, it's better just to take it, spend some time crying, and then wake up the next day and move on. You'll have a few bruises that'll remind you, but after a while, those bruises fade, and now it's time to get up to some shit again, is what he says. So, like, it's kind of like we have to laugh about this or else we would scream about it, but it also is kind of this story of resilience, right? Like, that's definitely something that comes through.
Sweet.
I see a lot of similarities.
Where does Trevor Noah live?
Today?
Yeah, is he in New York?
I do not know the Daily Show. What's
his address?
Yeah, what is his address, Joe? Let me get a paper.
It is... All right.
Sorry to cut you off there, Ian. I just had a pretty important question I needed to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Is it done?
Yeah, that was it.
Did you get an answer or not? Okay.
No, I didn't get an answer. I never get an answer.
I'm really interested, Joe, by the similarities between these books. Like, the idea that no matter, like, there are different punishments for different racial groups is all over Equiano's story.
Sure.
Things that he would be punished for as a black man, the white people are not punished for. And also the sort of rising above, it's really interesting that these are not like sort of success stories where you say, oh, cool. You know, they're being helped by their trust fund. It's like rags to riches and being kicked in the mouth repeatedly on the way to that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, we're all familiar with this idea that like strength comes from adversity, right? Strength comes from adversity, right? Like pressure creates diamonds.
The heavier that the weight is, the more muscles you'll get.
Perfect. You've got it.
I think that's Shakespeare.
Makes you stronger.
It sounds like both of our books this week are like kind of like testaments to that. Like, I think Trevor Noah would say, like, look, times were really tough growing up. Like, I was in physical danger very often. Like, I was bullied. I was constantly an outsider. But I had this kind of loving support. You know, I had like this mother that would do anything for me and like kept me in line, but also like kept me honest, and I'm better for it. Like, it made me stronger. Like, my childhood made me who I am today.
Right. Look at me now, bitches.
Look at me now, bitches. That's the afterword to this book.
Right. Oh, these both sound pretty good. While I deliberate here, would you guys like to puck the show, please?
Litheads, as you know, this podcast has been its own success story. various presidents have invited us to be part of various White House dinners.
Dead presidents.
We've appeared on Ryan Reynolds' TV show.
Ryan Seacrest, yeah.
Ryan Seacrest. Ryan Seacrest has been a guest multiple times. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is we've been a success story. If you want to be a character in this success story,
sure,
you can head on over to our social media at You Don't Know Lit. You can head over to the website, which is youdontknowlitpodcast.com. Give us a book recommendation. Tell us a good book that we should read. We're always looking for recommendations from you, our faithful Litheads. You could also leave us a review in the iTunes store, 5 stars, if you please. You could tell a friend. You could shout it from the rooftops. What else could they do, Joe?
They could. I wasn't really listening. I tuned out as well. Book.
Yep. Sorry, Joe.
You could do all sorts of things. Tell a friend. Tell a friend. Tell a subordinate and make them listen. If you work in a kitchen,
may I step in here?
Put it on. Yes.
Please. If you are maybe like a manager at anywhere, and you have like employees that have to do what you say,
like an orientation for new employees, you make this a mandatory part of the orientation.
New ones, old ones. It doesn't matter how old the employees are. You just need to make them listen to the show and give us a review on Apple iTunes. That's it.
That's it. Last of all, folks, since it is Black History Month, I'm going to encourage you to make an effort to watch a movie or a TV show from a Black director and or writer this week. Expand the media that you take in. Make an effort to spotlight Black voices in your viewing habits. That's my recommendation for this week.
And would you say, Ian, that if they don't, they're racists?
Oh, I would not say that. I would say that it is an excellent thing to be intentional about the media you consume.
Ah, gotcha. There we go. Okay.
That's what I'll say.
Ian, that is certainly a good point, but you do lose this week. Joe, I would like to learn more about apartheid, and this seems like a nice introduction to maybe that subject. Maybe you can, do you have a quote for us, Joe?
I have many good quotes. I think one of the cool things about this book is it has one of like the highest like quotable lines per page of any book that I've brought. There's per tons capita of good quotes here.
Can I just say, it's like those, that's an underrated value. Like the quotability, when I was doing Invisible Man, that is a hard book to quote. So,
and I think since it's what I talked about a little bit here, I think I'm going to talk about his mother a little bit here and the very unique upbringing that he had. He says, "My mother took me to places that black people never went. She refused to be bound by ridiculous ideas of what black people could or couldn't or shouldn't do. She'd take me to the ice rink to go skating. Johannesburg had this massive epic drive-in movie theater, Top Star Drive-Ins, out on top of a massive mine dump outside the city. She'd take me to movies there. We'd get snacks, hang the speaker in our car window. Top Star had a 360-degree view of the city, the suburbs, Soweto. Up there, I could see for miles in every direction. I felt like I was on top of the world. My mom raised me as if there were no limitations on what I could go, where I could go, or what I could do. When I look back, I realize that she raised me like a white kid. Not white culturally, but in the sense that believing that the world was my oyster, that I should speak up for myself, that my ideas and thoughts and decisions mattered. We tell people to follow their dreams, but if you can only dream of what you can imagine, and depending on where you come from, your imagination can be pretty limited. Growing up in Soweto, our dream was to put another room on the house, maybe have a driveway, maybe someday get a gate at the end of that driveway, because that's all we knew. But the highest rung of what's far possible is far beyond the world that you can see. My mother showed me what was possible. The thing that always amazed me about her life is that no one showed her. No one chose her. She did it on her own. She found her way through sheer force of will. Perhaps even more amazing is the fact that my mother started her little project, me, at a time when she could not have known that apartheid would end. There was no reason to think it would end. It had seen generations come and go. I was nearly 6 when Mandela was released, 10 before democracy finally came, and yet she was preparing me to live a life of freedom long before we knew freedom would exist.